The fourth parak has various halacha lemaisa issues that really are relevant today. The first one is talking about the isser of malacha not working on Erev Pesach. So when it comes to minhagim, this is just a little bit important information that we have to stick with the minhagim that we have from our ancestors, and there are various sources that are brought to the importance of sticking with minhagim, and there are also many types of minhagim with different levels of strength and responsibility and obligation to follow them. But on a high level, the primary source for following minhagim is a pasuk in Mishlei. It says Shema b'ni Musar avicha v'al titosh Torah simecha. It's a famous pasuk. Shema b'ni, listen, my son, to the musar of your father. Don't remove the Torah of your mother, the teachings of your mother. So that's one of the sources that of the obligation to stick with minhagim. Rav Shri Ragon brings a very interesting one in pasuk in Devarim. He says lo tasi gvul reacha. Hasagas gvul is the iser to move the border between two pieces of property. And the pasuk continues asher gavlu rishonim, that were established, that were marked out by the earlier ones. And Rav Shri Ragon says this is also applying to customs that were established by our ancestors. If they were established, the Rishonim as our ancestors, we need to adhere to the Gvulos, to the borders, the Minhagim that they have established. So Mishnah Aleph is dealing with different Minhagim, and specifically the Minhag of not working on Erev Pesach. So Mishnah Aleph says as follows, Makom Shenagu Lasos Melacha V'Arbei Pesachim Ad Chatzos Osim. If you live in a place that the Minhag is that they do work up until Chatzos on Erev Pesach, it's permitted to do so. Makom Shenagu Shalola Asos, if you live in a place that the minhag is to not do melacha even before Chatzos, Ein Osim, you cannot do it. You have to adhere to the makom, to the minhag of makom. Now, everyone agrees that after Chatzos, it's prohibited. That's the time that the Korban Pesach could be brought, and accordingly we too, even if we don't have the Korban Pesach, we need to be involved in the preparations for Pesach. So after Chatzot there would be a prohibition. It's not totally in the Minhag HaMakom, but there would be a blanket prohibition of working on Erev Pesach after Chatzos. Now the Mishnah now is going to mix things up and talk about somebody who traveled. For example, you went to the in-laws, and in your place there's one Minhag, and where you're going for Pesach, where you happen to be on Erev Pesach, they have a different Minhag. So which Minhag do you have to adhere to? So the Mishnah says as follows, HaHolech Mimakom She'osin LeMakom She'ein Osin. Somebody who goes from a place that the minhag is that they are lenient and they do melacha up until Chatzos on Erev Pesach, but he's now in a place on Erev Pesach that they are strict, that they don't do melacha, or the converse of that, Omi Makom Shein Osin, he comes from a place that they don't do melacha, and he's in a more lenient jurisdiction, Lamakom Shosin, a place that they do work before Chatzos. So what do you do? So the Mishnah says, an important klal that applies in other contexts as well, Nosnim Alav Chumrei Makom Shiatza Misham, he has the Chumrei of the place that he left. In other words, if he comes from a place that they're machmir to not do malacha, he has to adhere to that even when he's in a place that they are lenient. And in addition, he has the chumras of the place that he went to. So in other words, if he comes from a place that's lenient and he's in a place that they are strict, he also has to adhere to the chumras of the place that he is located in. Why is this? We have another statement here that somebody should not do different in the place that he is because of a machlokas. In other words, if he is in a place that people do not work and he comes from a place that people do work, he should act according to the place that he is at, and he should not be working in order to not cause a machlokas. He shouldn't be different, do different than the locals. However, if he comes from a place, indeed, that they did not do work, and he's in a place now that they do work, he also, in this situation, he should refrain from doing work. People are not going to look at him saying, why isn't he working? Because there are other people there who also aren't working. They're just going to assume he has no work to do. He's out of work. He's not well, whatever it is. So in that situation, he would not adhere to the local custom of working. He should refrain from working like the place that he has come from. Mishnah Beis requires a little bit background on the laws of Shemitah. We'll see that this is a continuation of the concepts of the prior Mishnah, but it also doesn't relate to Pesach. So the background goes as follows, that during the Shemitah year, every seventh year in the cycle, we are permitted to eat the fruits, but everyone's permitted to eat everyone else's fruit. It's the land is ownerless, and the fruit can be eaten by anyone in the land of Eretz Yisrael. Here's a halacha, and it's based on a pasuk that says in Vayikra Chafei, that it's a Shabbos, it's a sabbatical, it's Shemitah for the year to be eaten. And then it continues in the pasuk, the next pasuk, lebehemtecha ulechaya asher be'artzecha tiyakol tfuasalechol. Also for the animals that are in the fields, they will be able to eat the produce. So there's a drasha that Chazal teach us, a certain halacha that during the Shemitah year and thereafter, we can continue eating the Shemitah produce at a certain point, however, based on these the lashon that is available to the animals, that once the produce is not available to the animals in the fields, in other words, that produce is not available anymore, we have to do bayur on that from our houses. In other words, it has to be removed from our houses. We can no longer carte blanche be eating the fruits and the vegetables that were Shemitah produce in our houses if it's not available in the field. So what do we do with it? That is a machlokas between the Rambam and the majority of poskim. Rambam is of the view that once you hit the zman bayur, in other words, each type of vegetable and fruit has its own time that it has to be removed from our houses. According to the Rambam, when it's no longer available in the field, you have to destroy the produce. It's prohibited to be eaten. However, that's not how we are noeg, and the most of the Rishonim are of the view that it simply means you have to take the produce out of the houses, each one at its specific time. For example, Erev Pesach would be for grapes, wine. And what you have to do is you have to be mafkir. You have to make it ownerless out in public, in a public area. And then anyone is permitted to take it, including the prior owner of that produce is allowed to reacquire it at that point. So that's called the Zman Beyur. So what our Mishnah is talking about is, how do we divide up? There are certain places that fruit and vegetables, they're available in certain areas, but not available in other areas. So Chazal tell us that there are actually three zones for this. They've divided up the land of Israel into three geographic areas called Yehuda, Eiver HaYarden, the other side of the Jordan, and the Galil up in the north. And if a produce, if a fruit or vegetable is available in one of those areas but not in the other, we get to the same question. If somebody takes produce from one area, for example, it's not available in Yehuda but it's available in Eiver HaYarden, and they take the produce from one place and to the other, or vice versa, what is the halacha? So that is what our Mishnah deals with. So here we go, as follows, Kiyotzeba, we see a similar concept as we just saw previously, that we have to be machmir based not only the place that we arrive at, but also the place that we come from. We have to be machmir on both sides of it. Hamolich perush shvi'is, somebody who takes the perus, the produce of shvi'is, of the Shemitah year, mimakom shekalu, to from a geographic area that is no longer available in the field, so they have to do the beer in that place. Lemakom shalokalu, to an area that it is still available in the fields. O mimakom shalokalu, or reverse, if they go from a place that it is still available in the fields and they take their produce from there, lemakom shekalu, they take it to a place that it is no longer available. We have to be machmir on both sides, chayev levar. They have to do biur, as we discussed, the machlokas of the Rambam and the other Rishonim, what that means. They have to do biur to that produce because we have to be machmir if it comes from a place that it's no longer available, or we go to a place that it's no longer available. We have to be machmir for both of that and do biur. That Tanakama, the Meforshim tells us, has a certain leniency in this, is that if you pickled a bunch of different vegetables together, for example, you have a barrel and everything was pickled together and they have different times for the bayur, different times when they are no longer available in the field. So what do you do if you have a combination of vegetables, and some of them we would have to, if they were independent, not pickled together, we'd have to do the beer on them, and others that their time has not come, that we have to do the beer. So according to the Tanakama, if they've all been pickled together, you can wait until the last date, in other words, the last vegetable that is still available in the field, that would drag along all the others, and we can be lenient on all the others until the last vegetable becomes unavailable in the fields. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with that and says each separate type of species of vegetable you have to treat independently, and as soon as its time of beor comes, you would have to take it out of that pickling barrel and get rid of it. And he continues, Omrim lo, we say to the owner of that barrel of pickled vegetables, say, v'havelecha af ata, go out into the field, and if you have a sample for each of those vegetables, then you can keep them. But if that any vegetable is not available in the field, if we find one that's not available, you have to pull out. For example, cucumber is not available, pull out all the cucumbers, but you can leave everything else. And if it's the peppers and the cucumbers not available, you can't find samples in the field where we are of those two, you have to pull them out. So that's the machlokas between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda, if we can treat all of those vegetables together and be makel on the ones that have had beer, as long as you have ones that have not reached the zman of beer, or according to Rabbi Yehuda, you have to treat each vegetable separately, and we're machmir on each one. If it's not available, it has to be pulled out of the mix, and beer has to be done. Mishnah Gimel and the next two Mishnayos thereafter as well continue discussing different minhagim in certain places that they're noheg to be matir, to permit certain things, and in other places that they were strict to not do certain activities. In particular, our Mishnah Gimel is going to talk about the Isser Mideoraisa of not having one's animal work on Shabbos. So we're prohibited, as the Pasuk says, not only from our doing Malach on Shabbos and our families doing and our servants, but our animals as well cannot do Malacha. As an extension of that Isser Midoraisa, there is also a Isser Derabanan to not lend or rent our animals at all to a non-Jew, because if we do that, these are work animals. It's called a behema gasa, which is a larger livestock. It's a larger animal. For example, oxen, horses, cows, bulls, etc., that they are work animals. We should not even lend or rent to non-Jew our animals, because they, when they use it on Shabbos, that would be an Isser D'oraisa. Our Mishnah is talking about an extension of the Isser D'oraisa to make sure that we don't violate any of these Isurim, is that we shouldn't even be selling certain animals to non-Jews. That's an Isser D'rabanan, and in fact, there are places that were nohag to extend that as well. Just one more piece of information before we go forward. There are different girsos in our Mishnah and other Mishnayos as well. When referring to non-Jews, they can be referred to as a goy or a nochri. Those are the most understandable usages, but also oftentimes the Mishnah will refer to them as an Ovid Kochavim, but in many contexts, it does not mean somebody who is a non-Jew who specifically is an idolater. It is a generic term that refers to any non-Jew. So that's an important mention here. There are times it's going to apply only when it says Ovid Kochavim, it may only mean an idolater, but certainly in our Mishnah and many others, it means any non-Jew. So the Mishnah says as follows, Makom Shenahagu Limkor Behema Daka, Le'ovid Kochavi Mochrim, and there is a place that they are noheg to sell a behema daka. Behema daka is a smaller animal, for example, a goat, a sheep. Those places that permit selling those animals to non-Jew, it's certainly permitted. Makom shalona agulim korei mochrim, if you live in a place that has extended the isurim to include, they're noheg to extend the prohibition to not even sell small livestock to non-Jews, it is not permitted. We have to be strict in such an area. V'chol makom, and at all places in mochrim lehem behema gasa, that we mentioned before in the introduction, no matter what, it applies in all places that we do not sell to them a behema gasa, which is a large animal, because we may come to lend or rent them animals and they may use them on Shabbos, which is the Isser Midoraisa. Now the Mishnah is going to point out two chumras on this that are actually required chumras, just like we don't sell them a behema gasa, that includes two important variables. Even if they are agalim usiachim, which means even if they are larger animals, in other words, they are large livestock, but they haven't grown up, they're still young. So in other words, it's still a calf, so the calves cannot be worked yet. Only when they grow up as an ox, can they do serious work? Or a siachim is a horse that is still small or full. So even though it doesn't do work yet, it would still fall into the prohibition of selling a behema gasa, a large livestock, even when they're smaller. And the second chumrah is that this applies both to shleimim ushvurim, whether they are shalem, which means healthy and they can do work, or broken shvurim. In other words, they're unable to do work, they are maimed, whatever, a significant disability in that animal. But still, the prohibition applies, because if people see that you're selling the smaller animals, when they will grow up, but right now they're smaller, that you're selling maimed animals, they're going to think you can sell all behema gasas as well, so it will be confusing. So the prohibition includes even when they're small and even when they are maimed. The next Tana, Rabbi Yehuda, Matir Beshur, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees on only that last point, that if it is disabled, it's a shavur, he says certainly that can be sold to a non-Jew. He's obviously not buying it to work it, but rather that he is buying it to slaughter it. He wants to do shechita on it, on that animal, so it would not be a problem selling, even though it's in the category of a behema gasa, but because it's disfigured, it's unable to work, it's permitted. And there's another Tana ben Beseira, Matir Besus ben Beseira, is of the view that this prohibition of selling a behema gasa to the non-Jews does not apply to horses. Horses are in a different category. The Tanakhama disagree with that, included horses, but Ben Beseira says that horses don't violate in Isser d'Oraisa when they carry somebody. Horses are typically not working, schlepping things, they're not labor horses, but they carry people, and there's no Isser d'Oraisa of riding a horse. There's an Isser d'Rabbanan of riding a horse on Shabbos, but not an Isser d'Oraisa. So Ben Beseir says it's permitted to sell a horse to a non-Jew. Mishnah Dalit starts out by discussing a concept that we have nowadays at the Lel HaSeder, that the Ashkenazim are makbid, they're very strict, to not have any roasted meat in the absence of a Korban Pesach, which had to be tzliyesh, which had to be roasted. In the absence of that, we do not have roasted meat, Ashkenazim, at their tables. Sfaradim are more lenient on this. This is the genesis for that, is based on this Mishnah. Makom shenagu le'achol tzali belele psachim, places that they are noheg to eat roasted meat on Lel HaSeder, Ochlim, they are permitted to eat. Makom shenagu shelo le'achol, in places that they are noheg to not eat roasted meat, ein Ochlim, they don't eat. Even in the places that are noheg to eat, that is talking about simply roasted meat, not in the form that the Korban Pesach itself was roasted. But even according to those that are lenient, to have roasted meat at the Seder, it's still prohibited to have what would be a kosher animal for a Korban Pesach, a goat or a lamb that was cooked in the exact same way that the Korban Pesach was cooked, on a spit, in its format, with its knees on the outside, etc., how it was tied on. So that would be indeed prohibited according to all opinions and in all places. Continuing, different minhag, makam, now we're talking about a minhag when it comes to Yom Kippur. And Yom Kippur, there are various items that are prohibited: eating, drinking, rechitza, washing oneself, sicha, anointing oneself, wearing shoes, and also marital relations. So the minhags that we're going to talk about now are going to be an effort to prevent any slippage in occurring marital relations. So makom shenagu lahadlik asaner b'leila yom kippur madliking, places that they would light the ner, literally, on Yom Kippur, that's talking about the night of Yom Kippur, they should light. In other words, what this is talking about is we light candles on Yom Kippur, just like every other yontif, but there are places that they would also light, not only throughout the house, but also in the bedroom. If there's light in a bedroom, then marital relations is prohibited. Accordingly, they would light Yom Kippur in the bedroom also, to prevent any relations from happening. And magu shenagu shalol lahadlik, in madlik, in places that they are noheg to not light in the bedroom, they would also not light. It would be prohibited to light if that's the minhag. In other words, this minhag is based on the view that if it's preferable that we don't have light in the bedroom, because if we have light, the husband will see the wife and that may inspire things, and accordingly it's better to not have light, and that would act as a disincentive to marital relations, which is prohibited on Yom Kippur. And in addition, even on the places that have the minhag to not light, Umadlikim babate knesios ubabate midrashos. There are still places that even if they have the minhag to not light in the bedroom, but they would still light in all places, would light in the base of knesses, in the shul, in the base medrash, ubamavuas ha'afelim, and dark alleyways so people can see around valgabe hacholim. And in addition, where the sick are, in all of these places, there's not going to be a concern of relations happening. So we should have light on Yom Kippur. Mishnah Hay discusses, is it permitted to do melacha on Tisha B'Av? Typically during an avelus, what we call an avelus chadasha, somebody who sits shiva, for example, lo aleinu, over a close relative, there's a prohibition during the shiva to do work, to be involved in one's career, etc., unless it's unusual circumstances. In the latter half of the shiva, there's maybe a heter, but the default is not doing any malacha, not doing any work during the shiva. That is for a new avelus, but an old avelus, an avelus yeshana, for example, the avelus that we have over the loss of the Beis HaMikdash, there is no absolute prohibition to be doing malacha. That's going to depend on the minhag makom. So the Mishnah tells us as follows: makom shenahagu lasos malacha b'tisha b'av, osim, a place that the minhag is to do malacha on Tisha B'av, it's permitted to do. And in the makom shenahagu shelo lasos malacha, ein osim, a place that there we are noheg to not do malacha on Tisha B'Av, it would be prohibited to do. Now, just to qualify something, we're not talking about the malacha like on Shabbos, that you can't turn on a light and you can't drive your car and you can't tie a permanent knot. We're talking about malacha on Tisha B'Av, anything that is going to take a little bit time or more that will distract us from focusing on the avelus of the day. But we are not talking about turning on a light or tying a knot or driving to shul or whatever. That is certainly not prohibited, even in places where there are noheg to not do malacha on Tisha B'Av. Now the Mishnah continues, u'b'chol makom talmidei chachamim betelim. When it comes to talmidei chachamim, even if they're in a place that there are noheg to do malacha, a Talmud Chacham should refrain from doing malacha because they have a more of a astute and keen understanding as to our loss over the Beis HaMikdash, and they should focus the full day on the Avelus of relating to the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel goes another step. Le'olam yase adam atmo talmid chacham. Everyone should make his talmid chacham in this regard. In other words, everyone should be focused on the avelus and not be working. Even if you're in a place that the minhag is to work, they're lenient on this. There's no sign of arrogance for someone to say, I'm going to opt out of that, I'm not going to work, and even if I'm not a Talmud Chacham, I'm going to act as the category of a Talmud Chacham today because I want to be involved in only the Avelus. That would be the ideal. Now, just an important point, l'halacha l'maisa, the minhag nowadays in Jewish communities is to not work up until Chatzos, after Chatzos. It depends on the minhag amakam. Some places are lenient, some places are strict, but up until Chatzos, we are strict to not do work, to not be at our jobs, etc. Now, even after Chatzos, the poskim say that we should be strict and not get too involved in our occupations. There are certain heterim, if it's a davar ha'avid, for example, but we should really be focusing on the avelu. So if something is quick and somebody is in a place that they're nohig to do work, that's one thing, but to get distracted by work and to lose our focus from the avelus, that is not good. And indeed, based on the Gemara, the poskim say that there was somebody who does work, even if it's after Chatzos, will not see a siman brach, will not see blessing from that work. Okay, continuing back in the Mishnah, we're going to change gears now, and we're actually going to refer back to how we started this perek, that not working on Erev Pesach up until Chatzot. After Chatzot, nobody should be doing working, but up until Chatzot depends on the minog. So now we're going back exactly to that point. V'chachamim omrim, chachamim say, B'Yehuda, in the area of Yehuda and Eretz Yisrael, hayu osim malacha b'arvei psachim ad Chatzot. They were lenient, and they would do malacha on Erev Pesach up until Chatzot. U'begaliel lo hayu osim kolik, or in the Galiel, they were strict, and they did not do work at all. There are two ways to understand these statements here. Either the chachamim here are disagreeing with how we started the parak. In the beginning of the parak, we said doing work depends on the minhag hamakom, and here Chachamim are disagreeing and says it's not dependent on a minhag hamakom. It's not minhag, it's halacha, and you would establish what's the halacha in your given area. So in Yehuda, it wasn't the minhag to not to work, but rather they paskind halacha lemaisa. You can do work on betul chasad, and in the Galil they paskind halacha lemaisa to not do work, but it wasn't a matter of a minhag. The other way to understand this is that we're fitting in with the first mission, not disagreeing with it, but in the first mission we says it depends on the minhag amakam, and here we're simply saying, Chachamim are saying, that in Yehuda the minhag was to be lenient, and in Galil the minhag was to be strict, but not that it is a psak halacha in each place. Continuing now, and even in places that they are no hag to be strict and prohibit even from the even in the mornings to not do work, certainly after Chatzos, but the places that are strict even before Chatzos, when does that start? When does the prohibition start to do work? Does it include the night before, or is it only from the morning? So the Mishnah continues, V'halayla, and how about the night before? That's the night that we would be doing the Bedikas Chameis, Beis Shammai Oshim. Beis Shammai says, if you're in a place that they are machmir in the morning, that chumrah starts from the night before. In other words, that's the minhag, is to not do work all the way from the night before through the night and the morning up until Chatzos, and at Chatzos, the Mi'ikar Adin, you cannot do any work. Beis Hillel Matirim and Hanetzach Hanama, and Beis Hillel is of the view that even in the place that's Machmir, the being Machmir before Chatzos, that only starts at Hanetzach Hanama, when the sun rises, that's when we are Machmir to not do Malacha, but even the places that are strict, they would not start the night before, only at sunrise. Mishnah Vav continues discussing what malacha can be done Erev Pesach before Chatzos. After Chatzos, nothing can be done. But before Chatzos, we said it depends on the minhag hamakom. Our Mishnah, according to most Meforshim, discusses places where the minhag is to not do work Erev Pesach before Chatzos. But the question focuses on what if there's a type of work that I started before the prohibited time. In other words, I started it on the 13th or even the 14th at night, but before Netzach Hama on the 14th in the day, and I need to finish it, I can finish it by Chatzos, and it's necessary for Yontif. Can I, in that instance, even though I live in a place that the minhag is to not do any malacha before Chatzos, when I've started it before, and I need it for Yontif, it's Letzorach Yontif, can I complete it before Chatzos? So the Mishnah says as follows, Rabbi Meir Omer, Rabbi Meir is of the view, Kol malacha she'yischil ba kodem la'arbasar, if you started a certain type of work before the arbasar, the 14th, which is Erev Pesach, you can gomra be'arbasar, you can finish it up on the 14th all the way up until Chatzos, if it's the type of work that is necessary for Pesach. However, aval lo yaschil ba betchila ba'arbasar, under any circumstances, you're not allowed to start during work on the 14th, even if it's necessary for Yontif. And even afal pishiach legomra, even if you can finish it before Chatzos, it doesn't matter. In a place that the minhag is to not do work, you cannot start any work, even if you can finish it, and even if it's necessary for Yontif. Only the whole heter is if you started earlier and you can finish bit by Chatzos. Now, according to Rabbi Meir, we see in places that it's the minhag to not work before Chatzos, you can't start anything, even if it's necessary for Yontif. But the Chachamim Omrim that there are certain categories of work, of occupations that are permitted to work on Erev Pesach before Chatzos, even in places where the minhag is to not do work. The Chachamim Omrim, Shalosh Umanios Osi Malacha Va'arme Pesachim Ar Chatzos, there are three categories of craftsmen, occupations that can work on Erev Pesach up until Chatzos, because what they do is essential for Yontif. So what are the three categories that are permitted? Ve'ilu ha-chayatim. Chayat is a tailor, tailoring items, clothing that is necessary for Yontif and Chol HaMoed. Ve'asaparim, and also asapar, the barbershops, they are booked on Erev Pesach before Chatzos, because in addition to get ready for Yontif, and in addition to that, we have to get ready for Yontif Chol HaMoed, we have Sfiras HaOmer coming, and many are noheg the first part of Sfira to not get haircut, so get it all in before Pesach. And number three, Vakovsin, which are the laundromats. Laundromats are also those who launder, are also very busy, because we have to wash all of our clothing for Yontif and Chol HaMoed all before Pesach starts. And Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda Omer, he adds on a fourth category, af haratzanim, also the shoemakers making people shoes for Yontif, they are also permitted to do work on Erev Pesach, before Chatzos, but all three of these, or four of these, according to Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda, would only be up until Chatzos, would they permitted to be doing these activities. Mishnah Zayin discusses the doing of certain activities even after Chatzos on Erev Pesach and compares and contrasts that to what would be permitted on Chol HaMoed. There are a number of parallels between what is prohibited and permitted on Chol HaMoed and on Erev Pesach, in particular after Chatzos, but there's one major significant difference between them, that what is prohibited during Chol HaMoed is not only Melacha, meaning creative work, but also what would be called a tircha yaseira, an excessive exertion, exerting oneself too much, even if it's not a malacha per se, it's not doing anything creative, would be problematic on Chol HaMoed. In contrast to that, Erev Pesach, even after Chatzos Hayom, even after midday, the prohibition is doing malacha, doing creative activities. But if something is not a malacha per se, but is simply an exertion, a tircha yaseira, that is permitted on Erev Pesach, even after Chatzos. What we're going to go through is three examples of that. That was the theory behind it, and here we'll put this into practice. So example number one, the Mishnah says as follows, Moshivin Shovachim Letarnagolim Barbasar. This means that it is permitted to place eggs underneath hens on the 14th of Pesach, at Erev Pesach, even after Chatzos. This is an activity that is not a malacha. There's no creativity going on in this. However, it is definitely a tircha yaseira. It takes a lot of effort to be putting those hens on to the eggs. That is permitted on Erev Pesach. Erev Pesach, even after Chatzos, we prohibit malacha, but not tircha yaseira, but not excessive effort. But during Chol HaMoed, this would be prohibited because of the exertion necessary. Continuing, v'tarnagoles shel barcha, if you have a hen that was sitting on the egg, and it was sitting on there a minimum of 3 days, so now this egg is not edible anymore, and it can only be hatched into an egg, it has progressed in its development of a chick, and now that hen that's sitting on there decides to take off, runs away. We need to get the hen back because we will have a financial loss from that egg. That is something that it's even permitted during Chol HaMoed. So even though there's a tircha yaseir, there would be a lot of effort getting that tarnagolas back, getting that hen back. But for purposes of a davar ha'avit, to not incur a financial loss, it would be permitted to find that hen and put it back onto that egg. Machzirino salamim koma, that's what it says, return it to its place. V'meisa moshivin acheres tachta, and if the hen that was sitting on it, even during Chol HaMoed, it passes away, it's been sitting there for 3 days, this egg is no longer edible, it would be permitted, despite the effort and exertion, to find another hen and put it onto that egg that has been sat on by the now deceased hen. Number two, example number two of activities that are more problematic during Chol HaMoed than Erev Pesach, even after Chatzos. Now we're going to talk about clearing away dung from under the area where the animals are. So it says, Gorfin mitachas ragle behema barbas. So it's permitted to clear away dung under the areas where the animals are living, literally under their feet, wherever they are. It would be permitted to take it out, to clean up that area and take it out, even after Chatzos on Erev Pesach. That would not be permitted during Chol HaMoed. That's a tircha yaseira. What would be permitted in the moed of a moed, mesalkin letzadin, in the moed, it's permitted simply to push it to the side of the pen of the area that they're in, but it would not be permitted to move it out because that's too much of an exertion. And the third example of activities that are more problematic during Chol HaMoed, it says as follows in the Mishnah, Molichin u'mevi'in kelin mebeis ha'uman. If you have various types of vessels that you use in your household and you brought it, or you want to bring it into the craftsman to fix them, so it's permitted even after Chatzos and Erev Pesach. Molichin means to bring it to the craftsman, u'mevi'in, and to take it back from the kelim. These are talking about types of kelim, of types of utensils. We don't even need for Pesach, then if you need it for Pesach, no problem. But we're talking again about something that is not creative in nature. It's just an exertion, a tirchi yisera. This is something that can be done after Chatzos on Erev Pesach, but it cannot be done on Chol HaMoed. And the Mishnah continues, Afal pi she'enam letzorach HaMoed, even though, as we said, that it's not for the need of the Moed, it would be permitted on Erev Pesach, but not Chol HaMoed, to bring in and take out those vessels and to be used after Pesach. We're taking into the craftsman to have something fixed. Obviously, it's not to have something fixed on Chol HaMoed. He would fix it after Chol HaMoed. But we're permitting the exertion on Erev Pesach, even after Chatzos, because there's no creative malacha being done here. Mishnah Ches deals with six things that the Anshei Yericho, people living in Yericho, would do that the Chachamim were not happy with. And as we'll see in the Mishnah, three of them they were somewhat unhappy with, but not unhappy enough to protest those activities that the Anshei Yericho were doing. And the other three, which are in the safe of our Mishnah, Chazal absolutely protested what the people living in Yericho did. Now, why is this Mishnah right here? Is because the first of these six deals with an act that they did, Malacha, after Chatzos on Erev Pesach. So here we go. Shisha Dvarim Asu Anshei Yericho. Six things that the residents of Yericho did, al shlosha michu biadam, three of them Chazal protested, val shlosha lo michu biadam, the other three that did not protest, although they were not in agreement with the Anshei Yericho, ve'elu hen shlo michu biadam, these are the three that that the Chachamim did not protest, although they were unhappy about. Number one is Markifin Dekalim Kolayom. This is talking about Erev Pesach. Kolayom means even after Chatzot, they would graft a deka, which is a date palm. And what's going on here is that when it comes to date palms, the male date palm has dates, the female doesn't. So what they would do is that they would graft the male date palm onto the female base, onto the trunk of the tree of the female, so it could produce also. Now, this is very time sensitive, so they would say they were of the view, the Anshei Yericho, that it's davar ha'aved, it's a financial loss, it's permitted after Chatzos on Erev Pesach, but Chachamim were of the view this does not fit into the category of what is considered a davar ha'aved, but they did not protest because they did see that there was somewhat, although a weak argument, but they did see that there was somewhat of an argument by the Anshei Yericho that it was a davar ha'aved. Number two, v'korachim et shema, there are various explanations what this means. One of the main ones is that they would skip when saying Kriyat Shema, the pasuk or the words, the verb is Baruch Shem Kevod Malchuso Le'olam Vayet. So they would simply say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hakem Hashem Echad and jump to Vahavta Hashem Elokecha. Obviously, Chazal were not happy with that. Chazal instituted that you should say Baruch Shem, but nonetheless, they did not protest because on a D'oraisa level, somebody who says Shema and jumps directly to Vahavta and skips Baruch Shem is still Yodse on a D'oraisa level, so they did not protest. Number three, Gimel. V'kotrim v'gochim lifnei Omer. And also there's a halacha to be matir chadash. Chadash is the new grain of the new crop of the year. It's not permitted to eat of it until after the Korban HaOmer was brought on the second day of Pesach, which is the 16th of Nisan. And Chazal instituted in order to make sure that people don't eat of the new grain that was, it was not even permitted to reap and pile up the grain that they had in the fields until that Korban on Omer was brought. So nonetheless, the Anshei Yericho would do that, the Kotzrim, the Gochim, Lifnei Omer, and they would cut, they would reap, and they would pile up. That's a Godesh, could put it into a pile before the Omer, before the Korban Omer was brought, and the Lomichu Biyadim. In this also, Chazal did not protest, although Chazal instituted, you're not allowed to do that, but because the risk was low that they would come to eat, they did not protest. So those are the three things Chazal were against, but did not protest. Ve'elu shemichu biadam. And here are the three practices that Chazal indeed did protest against the actions of Anshei Yericho. Number one, matirin gamzios shel hektes. Gamzios shel hektes is when somebody donated a tree. They were makdis a tree to the Beis HaMikdash. Anyone who benefits from that article, something that's owned by the Beis HaMikdash, including that tree, violates the Isser of Me'ila, Misser D'oraisa of Me'ila, That is profaning something that has been consecrated to the Beis HaMikdash. It's owned by the Beis HaMikdash. Now, the Anshei Yericho was of the view that the Gamziot, which is the new growth that came out of the tree subsequent to when somebody donated it to the Beis HaMikdash, that was not Hekdesh. That was not owned by the Beis HaMikdash. And then they would benefit from that growth from the tree. But Chachamim were of the view that even if on a Doraisa level, there's no Isser Me'ilah, but nonetheless, there's an Isser Derabanan Ami'ila for the growth that comes out of the tree after the donation. So on this, they absolutely protested the actions of Anshei Yericho. Number two, V'ochli mitachas ha-nisharim b'shabes. Mit-nisharim are fruits that fall off on Shabbos. Fruits that fall off a tree or vegetables that fall off a tree that were not on the tree when Shabbos, that were on the tree when Shabbos started are muksa. Isser Derabanan of muksa. And Anshei Yericho nonetheless would go and swoop up the things under the trees and they would eat of them. They held that maybe it fell before Shabbos, so they would rationalize it that way. But Chachamim were of the view that if it possibly fell off on Shabbos, it indeed is muksha and should not be eaten. And indeed, Chachamim protested that what the Anshei Yericho were doing because they were violating the Isra of muksha. And the last of the three that they protested, Venosnim Peya Layarek, in the halachas of Peya, Peya is the standing of the crop that's left in the field that is left for the poor. So there's a halacha that's something that's subject to Peya. When you leave the Peya out there for the poor to take, you or the people who take it don't have to be mafrish, don't have to separate tithes, chumas and maestras. Now, the Anshei Yericho would leave even the vegetables are not subject to the lachas of peya. In other words, you have to take chumas and maestras from all vegetables, and you don't have to leave vegetables as peya for the poor. So the lachas of peya don't apply to vegetables. Nonetheless, the Anshei Yericho would leave vegetables as peya. The standing vegetables, they would leave it in the field for the poor, and this caused a problem because people would think that the halachas of peah do apply to vegetables, and they would accordingly, when they came to take those vegetables, would not take off the proper ties, chumas and maishas, thinking like it's a proper peah that you don't have to take. So Chachamim indeed protested, saying you're leaving the vegetables as peah in the field, you're causing people to not take chumas and maishas when they need to, and accordingly Chachamim protested, saying vegetables are not subject to the halachas of peah. Don't leave it as peah. You have to make sure to take off chumas and maisras. Michu biadam chachamim on these latter three, chachamim indeed protested in each of these three cases. Mishnah Tes is similar to the prior Mishnah in that we list six actions that Chizkiyahu HaMelech did. It's Chizkiyahu in this case, not Anshei Yericho. Three of them Chazal were on board and agreed to. Three of them Chazal disagreed with. The Mishnah says as follows, Shisha Dvarim, Asa Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Six things Chizkiyahu, who was a tremendous tzaddik, one of the greatest kings Klal Yisrael ever had, through six things that he did, al shlosha hodulo, three things that the chachamim agreed with, al shlosha lo hodulo, and another three that they did not agree with. So that we're going to list the three that indeed Chazal agreed with. Gerer Atzmos Aviv Almita Shal Chavalim, the father of Chizkiyahu HaMelech was Achaz, one of the great Rishayim of the kings of Klal Yisrael, who was Chote Umachti. He was an idolatrous king, and he caused others to do idolatry. And in order for his father, once he passed away, and when Achaz passed away, to bring an atonement for his sins, what Chizkiyahu did is, instead of bringing him in a dignified way to be buried, he had his bones dragged on a mita shel chavalim, which is a bed of cheap ropes. It's literally ropes. Instead of in a dignified way, he had his bones dragged to their burial. V'hodulo, and Chazal agreed with that, to act as a kapara for Achaz's sins. Number two, kitas nechash hanechoshes v'hodulo. The nechash hanechoshes was the copper snake, the serpent that Moshe Rabbeinu made. With a little bit of the background on this, is when Klal Yisrael, they were complaining about the man, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent a plague, and then said, Moshe Rabbeinu, to stop the plague, you should make the copper serpent, which went on to become the symbol of the American Medical Association, the AMA, so that's why it's the serpent, the copper serpent. So that copper serpent, at that time, stopped the Magefa, the plague of Klal Yisrael, and then, until the time of Chizkiyahu, the problem is that people started to worship it, thinking that it had its own powers. And And accordingly, Chizkiyahu said, we need to stop this Avodah Zarah, people worshiping this Nechash HaNechoshes. And accordingly, he crushed it up, he ground it up, he destroyed it and got rid of it. And that's number two. And Chazal agreed with that. V'hodulo, kitas Nechash HaNechoshes v'hodulo. Number three, Gana Sefer Refuas v'hodulo. Similar to the Nechash HaNechoshes, there was a Sefer Refuas, a book of remedies that people would use, that it listed the various remedies that plants would have. So if you take this plant, you would take care of this physical ailment, you would take care of this physical ailment. And people were quick to the draw when they got sick. They would simply look it up and take the remedy that was listed there. And it didn't lead them to become more humble. It didn't lead them to submitting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to being closer b'tshuva. So accordingly, he said, it's great to have a refuah, but not at the expense of people not learning through getting sick. So again, he buried it. He hid the Sefer Refuas. V'hodulon Chachamim agreed with him. Continuing with the three Chachamim did not agree with. Ashlosha lo hodulo. These are the three. Number one is Kitzatz Dlatos Shel Heichal Vishigran Lamelech Ashur. This is a little bit background. Sancheiriv, who was the king of Ashur, of Assyria, was demanding and he had a tremendous army and which was definitely much greater than any capabilities that Chizkiyahu have. So what happened, and you see this in a number of places in the Nevi'im, that you had a foreign king demand a ransom, pay me an annual fee, either to not attack you or to in order for me to agree to protect you if you get attacked from somebody else. So in this case, it was Sancheiriv demanded a tremendous amount of money from the Klal Yisrael led by Chizkiyahu, and Chizkiyahu was not able to collect enough to pay the payment, the tax, the tribute to Sancheiriv. Accordingly, in order to make up the shortfall, he took the golden plated doors, the gold doors off of the Heichal of the Beis Hamikdash, and sent that because that had a lot of value. But Chachamim were against that, v'lo hodulo, because they were of the view you should have relied on a Kaddish Baruch Hu and not disgrace the Beis Hamikdash by taking the doors off and sending it off to Sancheiriv. So that was number one. Number two that they disagreed with, Sasam Megichon Ha'elyon V'lohodulo. Again, we had the Assyrian army coming to siege Klal Yisrael, to siege Yerushalayim, and what Chizkiyahu decided to do was to cut off their water supply. So he stopped up the Gichon HaElyon, which was the water of supply to Yerushalayim. So she stopped that up in order that the Assyrian army could not benefit from it. The Lo Hodulo and Chachamim again did not agree with him because they were of the view HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and there's a pasuk in Malachim Beis that says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will protect and save Yerushalayim, and Chachamim were of the view you should have had trust and faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu rather than closing up the water supply. And number three that Chachamim did not agree with, Iber Nisan B'Nisan V'lo Hodulo. What is Iber? So we have the concept of having a leap year. So in other words, just like this year, we add in a second Adar. So we have Adar Aleph and Adar Bet in order to get the months back on track so that every Chag falls in the proper season. So you have to make a decision. Chachamim had to make a decision. When do you add in the Adar Beis? It has to be done before Nisan actually starts. So what Chizkiyahu made a mistake on is the Iber Nisan bin Nisan. He waited too long and he said that we're going to be Ma'aber, we're going to have a leap year and have a second Adar, but he did it only once Nisan actually began. That is too late. So Chachamim were of the view you did it wrong. You should have added the extra month earlier, and once you did it too late, you can no longer add the extra month.